Virtual people, welcome to the first episode of Phantom Spotlight's VCR Redux, where we take your favorite franchises out of the analog era and bring them back to 2021. I'm your host, Chris Stiles, joined as always by my co-host with the most, Mr. Film Professor Ian Klink.
Hello everybody, how are ya?
Also tagging along is Hollow Nine Network founder and podcast extraordinaire, Dave the Clone Maresca.
Hey, hey, hey.
And of course, Rick Barth and the line guitarist and six string slayer, Mickey Torres.
What's up, everyone there?
And today, we have a very special franchise on our hands. The task is upon us to resurrect, renovate, and reinvigorate the RoboCop franchise. But before we get to that, let's talk about what makes RoboCop so great, why we love this movie, and how this movie came into your lives. Who wants to kick it off?
I'll tell you one thing, man. It's from the era where they made action figures for everybody, like even the guy that you're supposed to give the donations to for the slain officers in the beginning, Cecil. He had an action figure.
Yeah.
And when you sent us the art for today's show, and it was called Renovating RoboCop, I was like, see, they would have made that action figure. And he'd be like, do you need walls taken out of your house? I'm renovating RoboCop. And he just like walks through like, I'll take it down for you, and just punches walls down. I totally had a whole toy line come to mind just from renovating RoboCop.
It would be a playset. It would totally be a playset.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Am I the only one here that doesn't remember? They did have RoboCop action figures. Did you all not have them?
That's why this is funny.
Well, yeah.
Oh, I thought
this is the era of R-rated action figures.
I thought you were saying you thought they should have one. I'm like, Dave, I had RoboCop. He had the caps in the back where you would, which is hilarious to think about. This R-rated, bloody guts everywhere, hands being blown off. You know, I mean. To have me as a 6-year-old have this little RoboCop gun playing around with it as if I'm advertising for this movie of blood and guts.
But what a Paul Verhoeven move to have his action figures actually fire off roll caps. Like, we're getting the full movie, like, explosions from your action figures. You know what I mean?
I see a line of action figures. All the kids, they have action figures, and we don't promote movie. It's just all explosions. That's what we have.
It was getting too violent, and they were getting too many complaints, so they came up with renovating RoboCop, who will show up and are you looking for a new home but can't find what you want? I can come and renovate anything for you. I'm renovating RoboCop. It will be within code.
Well, the incredible thing I think about RoboCop and the franchise in general is this really incredibly violent, super bloody, R-rated action movie came into all of our lives, at least speaking for myself, you know, at a very young age. I think I was 3 years old, and I was obsessed with RoboCop.
Mine was like most of the movies we always talk about. Mine, of course, is HBO.
Yeah.
You know, when they played RoboCop.
HBO.
But I remember in the movie theater that one sheet poster, which is probably the best one sheet poster. It's got to be in the top 20 of all time, you know, because it said everything you need to know about the movie. The cop out of the car, foot on the ground, RoboCop.
Part man, part machine, all cop.
I mean, when being
a cop was like what every kid wanted to be. We were like, yeah, there was no controversy then. Everybody kind of loved cops. Maybe. I don't know. Some people did.
I don't care. I don't care who you are. If you saw that poster, you went to go see RoboCop. I mean, I was a little too young. But as we all know, HBO had no guidelines then, so anybody could watch it. So that's where I came to RoboCop. You know, that was the one they would show on HBO at least once a week after it premiered. So that's where I came along to RoboCop.
Yeah, for me it was definitely HBO as well. I mean, that's kind of where you saw all the R-rated movies when you were a kid, because you couldn't get into the theaters unless you had like a parent or you had an older friend. We used to get the older friend, like, yeah, we're with him, and he let you in. But yeah, so I saw that on HBO, and I just remember just going like, this is like the coolest movie ever. I mean, the poster sold it too. It was like literally like you just saw the poster and you were immediately like, I gotta see this movie. You didn't know anything else. You just knew that it's Robo and it's a cop, and you put them together, and you know what? You sold me. I'm there.
Friends told me about it at school before I had ever seen any artwork. So I just, in my mind, concocted a picture that was a cross between Dick Tracy and that robot henchman that Pizza the Hut had in Spaceballs. And I thought that's what RoboCop was going to look like. It was like a robot with a fedora and a trench coat. And then my mom wound up renting it because once she found out it was rated R, suddenly we weren't going to go see it in the movies anymore. And when I saw it, I remember this was the what probably at the time the most violent movie I'd ever seen in my life. So I actually remember the anxiousness when they were about to blow off Murphy's hand, and I was, and my mom even said, are you guys going to be able to watch this movie? To me and my two younger sisters, and I was in kindergarten or first grade, and she was like, are you guys going to be able to watch this? And we were all like, yeah, yeah. And it just kept getting worse. Ed 209 was one of the scariest things in the world to me for a long time. I've feared the robot revolution for quite some time.
Ed 209. Can we shout out to Phil Tippett? I mean, if anything that man did in the late 80s, early 90s was just solid gold. That Ed 209 certainly deserved that special Oscar that it won. I mean, even you know how hard it is to animate the little foot kind of, you know,
curl.
Yeah, do you know how hard that is to animate that? That took at least a week to just get this little that nobody notices. If you're watching the movie, nobody notices it.
But, I was happy
but that
when
little
he died.
That little foot tap is just pure genius.
Just that, the personality that he was able to put into something like Ed 209, like its reluctance to go down the stairs and little things. But but for me, you know, the movie came in through VHS, you know, like many movies came in through my life. I wish to God I had seen it on the big screen, but that would not happen to me until a few years later when RoboCop 2 came out. Ooh. And you know, we will have to talk about RoboCop 2 and 3 and, you know, stuff. The series, you know, the fact that it was a cartoon, the fact that it had two TV shows.
Oh, my God, it was a cartoon. You know, yeah, I forgot about that.
I think it's sad that the RoboCop 2 that we got is what it was. You know, for me, the first act is actually pretty solid. They, like, start asking some interesting questions, like, what kind of husband can you be? How can you, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then none of that goes anywhere, and it just turns into, like, the third act is just awful. It feels very studio-metalled, and something about it. I've heard that, you know, and it's a shame because Irvin Kershner directed Empire Strikes Back, the greatest sequel ever made, and then he directed RoboCop 2, which is like one of the biggest falls from grace from the original that's like ever happened. And, you know, I've heard stories. Nancy Allen said he was very cranky when they made RoboCop 2. But, you know, I think that was maybe the first time I had seen a movie and walked out thinking like, maybe the first one can be better sometimes than the sequels.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I don't see a sequel just because it exists. Maybe I have to be more discerning, I guess, with which ones I put my money towards. I never had that realization. I would always just go in full in as a completionist. So even if I missed stuff in the theater, finding out that it was on, you know, VHS, we'd have to go rent it right away. Just because I hate the dangling thread of not knowing what happened next for these characters. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you got by the end of the first movie, you kind of wonder if Lewis is going to live because she got shot up pretty good, but nowhere near what happened to Murphy at the beginning. So you're kind of like, you know, and let's see, he's kind of more guy than machine by the end of this. Like, how's that going to translate into the second movie? And the second movie, they kind of reset him a little bit. He was a little bit more almost factory default. He was back to the visor on and kind of wearing the skin we all met him in. And then some of the other stuff starts to come back, like when they try to replicate RoboCop, which Tom Noonan, I mean, for all its faults, what a great choice as the villain. The basis for the villain RoboCop in RoboCop 2. You know, for as much as I don't like it, things like that will still bring me back. And the fact that he just breaks that chick's neck when he becomes the robot, like the viciousness of RoboCop 2 is insane, you know?
And Frank Miller wrote all these, correct?
He wrote 2 and 3. The first one was Michael Miner and Ed Neumeier. Okay. I may be pronouncing that wrong. But
we're going to get emails.
And there's a lot of stuff on the internet about, like, oh, he wrote the story but then they rewrote it and this and that, you know, that like he's kind of disavowed it and this, and I think his original treatment was very different. There are, you know, stories upon stories about what happened to RoboCop in the course of its sequels. And, you know, you made a good point. Tom Noonan is really good. But for me, you know, Nuke, you know, and Kane, all that stuff, it just, that none of that stuff really had the impact that, like, Clarence Boddicker is tough to beat. I mean, yeah, he is, in my mind, the greatest villain of all time. I could give a whole essay on why he's so great.
He's awesome.
But that is really where the problems with the RoboCop franchise start. When, you know, you can't follow up the first villain with a better villain, you can't really raise the stakes from an emotional standpoint, because how are you going to be more attached to someone than the guy who killed Murphy, the guy who, you know, kills the hero 20 minutes into the movie? I mean, what? How more effective can you be as a villain?
Well, I'll tell you, Batman, who made that Joker, man. He dropped him into that vat of chemicals. There's something to be said for having that.
Well, and I want to point this out. This is kind of interesting. If you look at RoboCop series, it actually has a very interesting connection to the Rambo series. And here's why. First Blood is one of the most fascinating political statement movies of all time. So is RoboCop. Now,
amen.
Rambo First Blood Part 2 and RoboCop 2.
Not RoboCop II.
Get rid of. No, it's RoboCop 2. You know, solid 2. You know,
that's true. They did not Roman numeral.
They didn't Roman numeral. No, but Rambo First Blood Part II did, you know, very much. Not political at all. I mean, it's almost the anti-message of the first one. And I think that's where, and they try. I know they try. If you watch RoboCop 2, they try to have those kind of political bits. But, I mean, nothing is better to me of a political statement than in RoboCop 1 when the family is playing, I think it's called Nukem. You know, it's basically.
Oh, yes, that's my favorite.
Yeah, it's Battleship with Nukem.
Pakistan is threatening my border. That's it, Buster. No more military aid.
Yeah, I mean, that for the 80s to have a commercial like that in a movie, there's nothing more solid political message than that. And it's not even under the surface. I mean, that's Paul Verhoeven slapping you in the face and saying, wake up, Americans. There's nothing more than that. But it's interesting how that's where I think RoboCop 2 and especially 3 really lost its way, because I don't think RoboCop 2 or 3 are bad movies. In fact, I rewatched 3 not too long ago and realized there's something to this. There really is. It's just they lost that right in your face politics.
Yeah, you know. Well, there's the Jaws effect too going on. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I think, I mean, the politics, I mean, like, OCP was basically the head of it all. Like, as far as, like, that's where you were gearing towards everything. OCP corrupting, you know, Detroit, which, you know, I gotta say, Detroit is just, it's just bad. Detroit is always bad. And these three, it's like, it doesn't get better. I'm like, you would
Motor
think after
Rock City, man.
It's not, like, it doesn't even matter if it's movies. It's just
bad. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's just that you know,
half time in America.
I did OCP is like Detroit in my younger days.
There you go. But OCP is like the corruption. OCP corrupts the police department. OCP corrupts everything. And it's basically like the start of the corruption in one, and then two. See, I like 2 and 3. I mean, I know we're gonna go more in depth, but like, I thought like 2 went more in depth with the human element of RoboCop.
Yeah,
which you didn't really you didn't get in 1. I mean, like you got that for like a minute minute in 1, but like he turned on to like he was like RoboCop, like that was like that. But the second one became more about the human element. More about like he was becoming more human and less robot. He was actually, you know, coming to grips with a lot of that stuff, and then, you know, went into 3 as well. But like, you know,
a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the other thing you have with one that you can't ever get with two or three is that before we ever see RoboCop, we have all these people talking about what RoboCop is. You know, we see Murphy get destroyed, but then you have this whole sort of montage of RoboCop in progress, and we're seeing it through RoboCop's eyes. So we're hearing it being talked about the way people talk about designing a product, which is kind of interesting. Imagine if a car was listening to you talk about ripping it apart to put it back together again, stuff like that. So there's weird.
You're
gonna
be a
going
bad
on.
Motherfucker.
Yeah, dude, we haven't talked about Miguel Ferrer yet. May he rest in peace. And he was, you had the father of Frankenstein. You know what I mean? Like you had multiple fathers of Frankenstein in the first movie. So in the second movie, they really tried to make that new OCP executive who was designing Kane into the new RoboCop, and how it became so much more the gimmick of like what happens when the same corporate corruption tries to just rubber stamp replicate, like, okay, wash, rinse, repeat, let's get more of these out there. But at the same time, you also saw the studio going, write that shit because we're selling toys. We're selling lots and lots of toys. So every single model that comes out in those presentations when they're trying to show off, I mean, the one that just pulls its head off and blows his brains out in the board meeting, like all of that was awesome, but I feel like all that was just so that they could have 20 toys for the second movie, you know what I mean? And by the third movie, you've got RoboCop with a jetpack and a ninja, you know what I mean? Like, it's like we're really expanding into like
RoboCop
series.
Flies.
The RoboCop series 3 action figures are amazing.
You know, being that there's a ninja killer in RoboCop 3, they might have been better suited to have been made by Cannon than Orion, which was Cannon was already gone at that point, of course.
Yeah. But let us not forget.
Ninja. Oh my god.
speaking of Canon, we do have some friends in the chat. Our friends over at Retro Fiend Radio have done some incredible docs on Canon films. They're tuned in and they actually have a message in the chat. They saw RoboCop with their family at the theater when they were 13. Their 8-year-old brother kept springing out of his seat with excitement and grabbing the back of the guy's chairs in front of him, and it was great.
that was back in the day when you could go and enjoy a movie in the movie theaters, man, and they wouldn't throw you out or put you on YouTube to be shamed by the world.
I am now rife with jealousy that they got to see this on the big screen, because I only got to see two on the big screen. I didn't even see 3 until VHS or maybe even cable, honestly.
Yeah, 3 was a cable.
I don't know what was going on in my life, but 3, when 3 happened, it was not a priority. For whatever reason, but we also do have another.
I saw 3 on Stars, and I did that thing as a little kid.
You're breaking
like,
with the HBO love that we like to give here all the time. Stars got to get its due every
it's
once.
All
in a while.
HBO.
Every once, hey, I saw Major Payne on Stars. Let's give them
Welcome
their
to
due
the
here.
House
okay.
Of
Stars had its moments, aka
they
Spartacus.
I'm totally giving them shit for no reason.
We also do have another watcher in the chat. Twyan Lannister says, my neighbor had it on VHS and his mom would make him fast forward through Weller's death scene.
I had a friend who did that. I had a friend whose mom did that at school, and we were always trying to compare notes because there was one kid whose mom made him leave the room every time something really intense was going to happen, and then there was another kid whose mom fast forwarded. So the rest of us would try to fill in the blanks. We'd be like, okay, Ed 209 literally turned that guy into hamburger meat. He flies back onto the model of the city. It's freaking amazing.
Have you guys seen the edited version of this? Like the really cut down TV version of Peter Welliger?
It's brilliant.
Oh my god. I mean, it's literally amazing. Like, what's going on? Click, chip, put. He's in the hospital.
And now he's a robot.
Then you get the European director's cut, and it's just
leave everything.
They actually kill you watching the movie what it feels. You get shot once just for Murphy's sake. You're like, oh man, that's a Murphy bullet.
I think, I'm pretty sure Boddicker drops either a baloney or a malarkey somewhere in the edited version. But
I think malarkey.
The one where it was like, is it malarkey? Yeah, like I'm sick of this malarkey. Like, you built the baloney thing.
You burned all the baloney money! You burned all the funky money!
I don't remember the edited version, but in the edited version, I guess we don't get his, like, his line that I love. It's like, well, give him a hand! Why did you shoot him?
I'll give
the
man a hand. I think
you
still got that.
You literally, it just jumps from, like, one gun, like one of the, like, cock the shell, and then it's like he's in the hospital. I mean, they cut out literally all.
Dude, I mean, that scene was traumatic, dude. I remember, like, my heart rate increased watching it. I'm like, they're really killing this guy. Like, I thought the actor got killed. It was,
yeah, yeah.
It was rough, man. Verhoeven set that bar for me for, like, the rest of my life.
It may have been, like, my first movie that I ever saw that, you know, like, horror, you know what you're going to get with horror. You're going to get the blood and guts and all that stuff. But this was an actual, like, just a regular movie or, like, an action movie. But, like, it might have been, like, the first, like, movie that outside of horror that I saw with that violent of nature, the scenes that were in there. I was just like, this is crazy.
Yeah. The hand flying apart, it was, like, shocking for the time that it came out. You know, him getting his hand blown off like that was, like, what are we watching? Oh, I'm at the part. I've got it running in the background here, and they're about to blow Pakistan's border. No more military aid. He just nuked him.
The sad thing is about Nuke 'Em is when I was a little kid, I actually kind of wanted to play that game. I was like, oh, yeah, fun. I want to nuke things. It, like, you know, little my young mind wasn't prepared to take that in properly. Luckily, I've adjusted my beliefs.
But I tell you what, like, that was a brilliant move to do the world building too. Like, it didn't just serve for the political thing, because they did continue the commercials in the second one. They just didn't have as much impact. But, like, didn't the second one have that, like, suntan lotion where it was, like, head to toe? Yeah, sunblock, the blue sunblock.
And that's Anna Maria. That's Anna Maria from Summer School.
Oh, work.
Yeah.
There you go.
And then, like, the Surgeon General warning was, like, may cause, like, cancer for overuse or whatever like that. Like, who wants to do that? Like,
we're not going to get skin cancer from the sun, but we'll get it from the stuff protecting us from the sun.
But I do like his purple highlights, too, in the second one. Like, his armor got purple highlights. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. More toys.
The iridescent tint. Yeah.
Yep.
Will be before we delve too deeply into Fred Dekker's third, rounding out the trilogy film. Man. I know it's no one's. I know.
Why'd it have to be Fred Dekker? You know what?
We love.
Why'd it have
it should be
Fred
said
Dekker?
That we love Fred Dekker, and it's a shame Tom Noonan wasn't in the one that he was. You know.
Yes.
That they didn't get to reunite for Monster Squad.
Yeah, Monster Squad reunion. You know,
RoboCop 3 is a very flawed film. None of it is the fault of Fred Dekker, though, in my opinion, at least. I can't speak for everyone else on this show, but I know you're watching, first of all, Fred Dekker. So, you know, give us a
like.
We don't
blame you, buddy. It ain't your fault. We get it. We get it.
Exactly. Black and Dekker is one of my favorite team-ups in cinema history. But, yeah, what else can we say? They really take the teeth out of RoboCop the third time around. At least he's not that awful blue shade that he is in the second film. But, you know, this seems like the punk scenes. You think I would like that? No, they seem very fake and inauthentic. And I don't know.
The splatterpunks, right?
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Splatterpunks,
Robert John Burke, great actor. But you're not.
Amazing.
You're just not Peter Weller, and we were just all so ingrained to Peter Weller. And what I love about
Peter
Weller,
Peter could have saved that movie either, though. To be fair,
probably not. I'll be honest. I mean, but at the same time, what you love about Peter Weller is he is the scholar. I mean, there's something scholarly to his acting that just brings you into those first two movies.
He makes it legit.
Yeah, and any time you replace anybody, it's not going to work. I mean, we all know that. And yet, I don't think, like I said, I don't think 3 is bad. It's just, you know, it was made at a time where I think, you know, like I said, they had lost what they knew that it was. You know, this is a time where we get the toys are coming out, so they know kids are watching RoboCop. The cartoon is out on TV. You know, it's the classic
video
thing.
Video games are in stores. Yeah.
Well, it's the classic thing that happened with Ghostbusters II. You know, they changed the movie to look more like the cartoon because most of us had seen the real Ghostbusters more so than we actually saw the first movie. You know, the first movie's kind of adult in a very strange way, but as the sequel came out, the more kids were watching this and were going to come to the theater. Well, make Annie Potts look like the toy, or make her look like, you know, the Janine in the cartoon show. I think they did the same thing with RoboCop and RoboCop 3.
Yeah, you know, make him look more like the cartoon. Yeah,
yeah. Well, the kids are watching. Yeah. You know,
interchangeable weapon arms. You know what I mean? Flying.
Oh,
you know,
flat
all
out
this
toy.
Kind of crazy
flat out
stuff
toy,
that you're like. You
a lot
know,
of humor too. They interject it like way too much humor.
And at that, and it's not the same kind of humor. It's not the sadistic, like delicious humor of the first film.
Yeah,
you know, it's just more like bad. You know, it's like bad. You know, take my wife, take her, please, kind of jokes. Yeah. You know, like it's really just not funny.
Do we know what the setup to "I'll buy that for a dollar" is? Does anybody know what comes before "I'll buy that for a dollar"?
Stop right now. Nobody. The best thing in film history. Everybody, shut up. This is the best thing in film history. Is that guy?
I didn't know this was gonna happen.
That guy doing that one part in this movie where the camera zooms in. I buy that for a dollar.
Can I have you both?
I mean,
we don't need to know it, but we know that
we don't need any more movies after that. They should have shut down theaters and just given up.
And it cuts to like the people watching the TV in the convenience store that gets robbed, they're watching that. When they're doing the craziness of the chaos at the end, he breaks open the TV window, the window to the TV store.
Turn up the volume.
That thing is on. I mean, like, everybody's watching the same stuff. It's kind of like, you know, to me, I was too young to get, like, that it was based in a reality like Detroit, but the idea of this world... Like, I saw the world that RoboCop lived in. I was glad I wasn't there because it seemed like a very scary fucking place. But I could see what they were doing, where everybody's watching the same TV shows. Everybody gets those jokes. You know, everybody knows about the 2000 SUX car that's coming out. You know what I mean? Like, 6,000. It's a thing. There are these, like, themes that kind of became the groundwork. That's why it was disappointing that 2 and 3 didn't kind of carry all of this storytelling forward. You know, I feel like video games, when you think about like the Genesis RoboCop versus Terminator video game, which took the grand step of crossing those two franchises, added more to the canon or tried to do more with the canon of the story than the sequels to this movie did. And that was where it became kind of like, but that was also the era where that stuff was happening. You know, we respect stories much more now, I think.
I want to take karate. I don't know about you. I don't know if you've ever taken karate. Every 5 minutes of this show, I was like, I want to take karate.
I'm the type of guy, I get my hopes up too high for everything. You know, I get too excited for these things, and you know, Cobra Kai came out, and I'm like, God damn it, they're doing it to me again. I'm too excited for this. It's probably not going to be anywhere near as good as I want it to be. And it was so much better. I had expectations that were way too high, and it passed every one that I had.
Man can't stand. He can't fight.
It's making me watch the first movie, the second movie. It's making me watch the movies again.
Yeah, I love the Karate Kid movies so much. The good guys and the bad guys, and Cobra Kai, of course. It's blew my mind. Way better than it has any right to be.
A man can't breathe.
That first Karate Kid movie, yeah, it shaped the whole way that you even thought about, like, the sort of bully-victim dynamic, the mentor-mentee dynamic. Karate was this mystical thing back then, and the way this movie handles introducing it, and then that becomes a theme that never leaves. It's throughout the whole franchise. I think that's something that makes this have a lot more emotional punch watching it older.
Yeah, these movies, they're every bit as good to me now as they were as a kid, and even though I know every fucking line to all three of the original movies and half the series by now, it's still, you know, this shit can make me Cobra cry, man.
This franchise, the way it connected its movies, was one of the things that always struck me as a genius move.
I think it was probably worth it that we did not get more Karate Kid movies for all this time, because when it came back the right way. This was worth the wait.
We'll call this the beginning, man. This is how it starts. The beginning of Hollow Nine Dojo, or Dojo 9.
Fear does not exist in this dojo. Pain does not exist in this dojo. We do not train to be merciful here. This is a place of learning. This is a place of knowledge. For years we've gotten from Karate Kid and Cobra Kai. And now it's time for us to get back.
It'll open up a way for us to talk about all kinds of martial arts movies. There's also, like, no way to not compare those instantly to Karate Kid.
Man, face you, he is your enemy, and the enemy deserves no mercy. We teach the way of the mic. Welcome
But well, I did like, before, you know, and I'm sorry, Chris, before I let you go here, the third movie had a classic line that I love. And it's when the dude is in the police station and he's talking to like the captain or whatever case may be. And he's asking, you got an alien cop? You got a vampire cop? You got a ghost cop? And RoboCop just busts in at that point. But I'm like, I don't know why, but I just find that like so funny. That's like Pootie Tang humor to me.
Yeah.
Like,
sign your pity on the first one. RoboCop.
It's like the guy in the first one, too. He's like, I am a repeat offender. I will offend again. I get my orders from a higher source, man. You know, that guy's amazing. I always remembered that when I was a kid. But I do want to touch back on the chat for a sec because Rick Barth is in the chat and he doubles your sentiment about RoboCop versus Terminator. He says he thinks Terminator is a better movie, but he will rewatch RoboCop more often.
Ooh.
That's, you know, an interesting way of putting it. RoboCop is a little bit more fun, I guess. Terminator is a pretty dark movie. He also says, Rick Barth also says, the TV version is free on YouTube, yet unwatchable. Also, Michael J. Poirier is in the chat. He says that, touching on what Ian was saying, he says that Peter Weller teaches at Syracuse University. So he does.
I did see that. Yeah, I did
see
that.
That's where I grew up. That's my hometown. I was born in Syracuse.
If you ever get a chance, there was this thing I saw on YouTube of Peter Weller. He was like criticizing the movie Training Day. He was at a panel somewhere discussing directing and acting and directing actors. And he was really like, that was what made me realize how much of like sort of like the auteur level of all of this that he is. And I almost felt like, in a way, it's interesting that someone like him would take a movie like RoboCop, because they can see the opportunity in a script like this to do something that all of us would be sitting here 30 years later talking about like this, like with reverence. Whereas if this was in the wrong hands, imagine it was like somebody else that didn't, that passed on it, you know, that they might've like tried to shoehorn in like a Schwarzenegger, you know what I mean? He's the robot guy. Let's put him in this. You know what I mean? Like there could have been so many missteps that would have made this terrible. But check that thing out on YouTube because it's pretty intense. You really get a new level of respect for him and how seriously he takes the craft of all of this.
I want Steven Seagal as RoboCop.
You know, there's a deep fake video on the internet of Arnold as RoboCop, and honestly, it's the final scene where the mask is off. It is the best deep fake I have ever seen. It's amazing, and it's complemented with the worst Arnold impersonation overdubbing it ever. So it's like a really interesting, like, you know, blend there. It's like incredible skilled deepfake artist, horrible voice artist impersonating Arnold, like it's something everyone does.
They're practicing for their Illuminati audition.
And also, if you want to check out like another funny RoboCop moment, it's the WCW pay-per-view Capital Combat, where RoboCop made an appearance on a live WCW pay-per-view for the rest of the
game. Cheesiest moment in RoboCop history. He bends these rubber bars on a jail cell that were like already bent before. You know, it's like they're, it was bad. It was not good for RoboCop. Brilliant. I don't think it was good for WCW. Although maybe it was because it's WCW.
You remembered it. You remembered it, guys.
No disrespect. But I do also want to shout out in the chat. We have the Cobra Kai family in there giving a little Chris Stiles, my brother. You know, we have some really exciting stuff coming to this channel very soon for you Karate Kid and Cobra Kai fans. but any rate, getting on to what Hollywood has done since. They've done, you know, two live-action TV shows, a cartoon show. Of course, the remake is a good case study in what Hollywood would do now if they were making another RoboCop. They would probably do something very similar to that. Yeah. Now, I don't find that remake to be as offensive as a lot of the other remakes of late. Like, I think it's better than, like, the Total Recall remake, you know, keep it in the Verhoeven universe. I would never watch the Miami Vice remake because that's not Miami Vice. You know, and all the other, you know, whatever else. Fright Night, I can't watch that stuff.
The Fright Night one's too bad. Good. The Fright Night one
But I did watch the RoboCop one, and it had some cool stuff.
Yeah, the actor was good. The actor, I can't remember his name, but he was in The Killing. You know, he did okay.
He's a good actor.
And I think I'm in that camp where I didn't like it, but I didn't like it again because of what I said earlier. It didn't have that politicalness that I really appreciate. Although I do know that it did kind of touch base on this whole kind of police brutality, and not that I want to go down this road too far, but it's ironic of thinking of RoboCop with what just happened with the verdict that came out yesterday, and all this kind of police awareness that's going on in the world. RoboCop did touch on a lot of that, subject matter over, 35 years ago. Police corruption.
This movie was very prescient.
I mean, what can happen if, police are defunded? What can happen with the crime rate? What could happen with businesses coming in and capitalizing on it and making it, police incorporated? It's a very fascinating movie, and I do appreciate the remake having touched a little bit on the surface. Again, though, I think what I love about RoboCop is they touched on the surface, and they had that little mixture, that little salt of fun that really made that cake just taste perfect. That movie just didn't have.
Like the fact that in that remake was, I didn't think that was bad. I actually enjoyed it, but it was really like a who's who casting. Like they went for like big hitters: Samuel Jackson, Michael Keaton, Jackie Earle Haley. I mean, you got a lot of people in there. They're like, to draw attention to this movie. But I also like the fact that like he basically, investigates his own murder scene. And just figures out his crime and everything else like that, which I thought that was pretty clever. I thought that was pretty good on that one.
Does definitely, Chris, I know you and I talked about this once, definitely touched, the remake touched on the missed step that I think they did with the wife in the sequels.
Yeah.
Now, I remember you and I talking about
that. That's true. They did fill in that blank a little bit for me.
Yeah, that wife was totally...
That was, I think, the strength of the movie.
Yeah, it was totally ignored in RoboCop 2, which is clear as day, was almost a setup. You see in the script where she comes to visit him.
I thought, in 2, doesn't Lewis say something about, like, she's complained that you're patrolling her street again? I think there was, like...
That to her, and then they make him say, they made this to honor him. He's dead, you're cold, They kind of reprogram him to, be a dick to her, and then she runs off, and it's like, that's really unsatisfying. Maybe they were supposed to pay that off in the third film, and they forgot. But
that was the regression from 1 to 2,
Also, to back up just a little bit and give some credit to Fred Decker, again, where it's due, his intention for RoboCop 3 was to have Lewis turn into a female RoboCop. And I think that actually could have been a lot more... That's a big step towards making RoboCop 3 more interesting. So,
I thought they were going to do that.
We love you, Fred Decker.
But I totally...
It's not your fault, buddy. It's not your fault.
I know you're watching,
it ain't your
Fred.
Fault, dude.
Touching back on the chat.
Monster Squad. And now also
To touch back on the chat, Alex Bonafonte agrees with you, Ian. Alex says, it's tough to duplicate the Paul Verhoeven touch, Total Recall, Starship Troopers, etc. Man, I couldn't agree more. Starship Troopers has all that attitude, all that political commentary that you have in the original RoboCop, obviously directed in kind of a new venue. And that's sort of where the remake, they kind of wandered into a little bit of Starship Troopery, waters, which was probably, not the best thing to do if you're trying to make your own stamp on things. But
I wanted the Battle of Giant Virgin. It's a big Virgin. it's a big. God, Paul Verhoeven, calm
down. It's all right as long as he had a giant beetle first.
Verhoeven was on his way to being the next Stanley Kubrick, in my opinion, and the world just couldn't handle Showgirls and its brilliant masterpiece of a film that it is. We will get to that another day, folks, so we don't lose Ian.
So many lines being drawn in the sand around here all of a sudden.
In the interest of keeping Ian and our viewers at home interested, what would you guys do if you were given the keys to the RoboCop kingdom? Where would you take this franchise?
I'm so glad you asked that, because I was actually just thinking, what could we do with this? We had a recent conversation about another franchise where in the middle of that we sort of cracked the idea for like a great Netflix prequel, and I'm suddenly thinking like, I want to see the Murphy years. I want to see at least 2 years of Murphy as a cop before he becomes RoboCop, kind of like what they tried to do with Caprica and Battlestar Galactica. Like, let's see him in his Metro South, like getting fed up with what's going on over there, that all the way up into where he transfers into old Detroit. And at the same time, they could be developing the OCP presence in the world, like the same way they did the sort of Waylanding in the newer Alien movies. You know what I mean? And I think that could be a really cool way that we could have a show that's kind of like a cop show. We don't even really have to call it RoboCop for a long time. You know, maybe it's just called Murphy and only really astute RoboCop fans pick up on it for a while. And then slowly, like as the first season is going by, you start to realize, holy shit, this is Murphy from RoboCop. You know what I mean? Like, we see the TJ Laser show. We see him interact with the star of that show, maybe. Maybe that guy teaches him how to do the gun twirl. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's a lot to play with in there. And you got to get all these old guys. Like, the old Ray Wise has to come back and play, like, some part
Leon
in it.
Nash.
You know? Oh, my God, dude. Yes. That, between this and Leland Palmer, it's like he's a god.
I got to say, man, you got balls because you basically just pitched, like, Superman, just the Clark Kent stuff, and you made it sound cool.
you did it interesting.
I was like,
all
right,
Smallville version
I shouldn't
of
like
RoboCop,
this, but actually, it does sound kind of interesting. You know,
Superman, yeah, just the Clark Kent stuff.
You know what? You know what? That would actually work, and I would buy that if there was the RoboCop 0.1 version out there, right? Before they got to the Murphy RoboCop year, there was one effort. That
military maybe
did, yeah, that didn't work and went rogue, and it's like Murphy has to battle RoboCop, because then at the very end of the series,
this
version is the evil RoboCop, then ironically, after, you know, he gets blown to pieces by 15 shotguns over the course of 26 minutes in the European cut, we get RoboCop. And the whole irony is, like, the ending shot is this Kubrick zoom in to Murphy's eyes in that little shield going, zoom, you know, in the red dot, cut to black.
Dun, 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 dun.
Basil, Basil's music.
Dude, RoboCop's music is so awesome. It's so awesome.
Or Palidores.
Basil Palidores.
Yeah.
You same
Basil,
guy who
Basil,
did,
I'm probably saying it wrong.
He did the Starship Troopers as well. Yeah, man. So
Mickey,
good.
What would you do? What would you do with the RoboCop franchise?
You know what? For the fourth RoboCop, I would act, you know, if I was doing a sequel to the third, obviously, I would... You know, I would definitely like Lewis becoming a RoboCop herself. But then I also think that you have to, like, I mean, I don't know. I see maybe another sequel in this, and that's that. So the end of OCP, you have to have this big battle or whatever to end the corruption of OCP.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't have another movie with OCP just basically redoing everything again, like being the bad guy, being the big bad or this and that, and just going with that. You have to have the end of it. You have to have some kind of, you know, rebel. Obviously, the Rebel Alliance, you know, goes with RoboCop, and then their whole big mission is to end the OCP. The cops are with them as well, and you have these battling, you know, forces here. I think that's just the way you have to go. And I would also like just the human element. I want to bring back the wife. I want to bring back the wife in this. Like, I mean, like, yeah, like you said, the remake did touch on the wife, brought her more to the forefront. I can't, seeing that remake and then, you know, watching these movies over again, I just can't understand why the wife would not have been a part of this story. Like, I mean, it was just basically like how they did it in the remake made sense, that, you know, it was the wife's decision and everything else like that. Like, I almost feel like you have to bring the wife into it and just tie it up. You know, tie it up to, like, you know, give RoboCop some peace. You know, obviously I want Weller back too. I mean, you gotta have that.
No, I'm not even gonna watch it if it doesn't have.
Yeah,
exactly.
Peter Weller. I'm sorry. It should be Peter Weller.
Oh my God.
Yep.
One last thing
that I think they could do it. It would be interesting, and I know it's a shot or whatever like that, but I would love it if the OCP brought back Boddicker as an evil RoboCop. Somehow, some way, they got his brain or something. They cloned him. I mean, we're talking way in the future.
Yeah,
we got clones
at that time,
you
right?
You could clone. You can clone him. You could even help clone Boddicker and Kane.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing.
You can leave Kane at home, but give me Roboticker. Roboticker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, like, you have no idea, like, somehow Dick Jones, like, at one of their meetings, like, you know.
Dick Jones!
Got like, a sample of his blood and had people working on it. So they've been, like,
something.
Cloning him. And then they have, like, a partially built new model of a robot. Oh, you know, all that stuff is so much sandbox to play.
Only if he wakes up from his clone-ness and he's just like, I work for Dick Jones. What?
But even like that, like if we do the prequel series, like you see young Dick Jones, you see young Bob Morton, all these guys who like, even Dick Jones maybe got into the business as like an altruistic guy and we get to see him become like a twisted villain, you know, like all these guys that we know and meet, right. Like young Boddicker, dude, how did he get to be like this? You know what I mean? Like I would buy a whole villain show of Boddicker. You know what I mean? Like,
only if Rosenbaum, who played Lex Luthor, only if he plays Boddicker as a young
Boddicker. we have to get Red Foreman to play old Boddicker now.
Somehow he survived.
I almost feel like this is your prequel. Almost sounds like Gotham too.
Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, you can't really get away from that shit, but it's about a cooler version of that stuff. I mean, Batman, we've seen so much of those. Like, I kind of feel like this was from a time where they would leave these properties like this on the battlefield. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't have the mentality of, like, resurrect that shit and kill it again the way they have now with everything. So,
but that works.
So the chat is blown up right now. I don't want to completely ignore. I don't want to completely ignore because these theories are all over the place. First of all, Twine Lannister says, remember the 94 RoboCop show with Richard Eden? Robo Trash or Robo Blast?
Yeah, well, like Dark Fury. Dark Fury.
Even as a kid.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Twine says, even as a kid, the watered downness of it, he wasn't a huge fan of. Alex Bonafonte says, do a dystopian post-nuclear Detroit, which I love. With RoboCop already being a prototype, I'm like, take my money.
So today.
That's fucking
today,
awesome.
Detroit.
Retro Fiend Radio has a really cool idea. Says they should have kept it hard R. Absolutely 1,000% agree there. That's part of the pitch I have in mind. And then he says they should have released RoboCop versus Predator in 88 or 89.
Yeah.
They both ruled 87 in the box office. Everyone would have loved them, would have been a blockbuster. Couldn't possibly agree more. And I do take some comfort that CK Family is pitching what I already had in mind to come here and pitch to you folks today, and that is a RoboCop Terminator crossover.
Yes.
CK Family's take is crossover where RoboCop receives the Terminator chip in his head and goes after John Connor. Now, that is pretty radical
awesome.
And pretty wild.
Oh,
not
God.
Quite what I would do, but one thing that CK Family did say that I actually did have in mind to talk about today was OCP merging with Skynet.
Yeah,
now, Nikki, you
want to
see the end of OCP? Yeah. I think we already kind of saw the end of OCP in the third movie, and it was just really bad. So I don't really want to redo that ending that was already bad. You know, we saw them kind of getting bought out by the Japanese corporation. That was sort of the end of days for OCP. So I kind of feel like OCP has run its course in these films for me. As much as I love OCP, you don't have Bob Morton. I don't think Ronnie Cox is going to come back.
Yeah.
Dan O'Hurley, he's not going to come back. I don't think he's alive anymore.
He's still around, you know, rest in peace if he's not.
I don't think anyone in that boardroom is going to be coming back. So the people
that
I'm attached to at OCP.
Was it the Judd Nelson knockoff who got shot up by Ed 209? If he comes back, maybe I can hang my hat on this.
Shout out to him for taking a squib to the testicles when they shot that.
And the throat.
And also, shout out to the upcoming RoboDoc. That is probably going to be the coolest thing that is done with the franchise in a long time. There's like a 5-hour documentary coming out. Looks incredible. Looks like it's better than RoboCop 2 times 3 put together. But yes, what I would do a absolutely hard R RoboCop versus Terminator. And I've thought about this for a while. I would start out with like a band of resistance fighters fighting their way through the junkyard heaps of L.A. or Detroit.
Oh, yeah, I guess it would have to be Detroit.
So you have a Detroit. You have to have a Detroit branch, and they're fun, but it looks just like T1 and 2, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's all dark, and just looks like a fucking garbage dump everywhere, and people look like they're homeless, and they haven't eaten, you know, anything other than rats for, like, you know, years. And you have these people get in an underground bunker, they get barricaded by Terminators, they go into this, they open this door, and they lift this tarp off this thing, and it's fucking RoboCop, and they turn it on, and it turns out... And as it turns out, and this is not all me, this is a lot of this is Dark Horse Comics, but as it turns out, Skynet bought OCP, and a lot of RoboCop's OS and his code went into the Terminators, which gives RoboCop a systematic advantage at being able to take down Terminators and, you know, understand hacking into their comms and stuff like that. And then I think it's also tempting for me to say that I would have a twist where they get screwed over by an actual human, like a human who sells people out to Skynet, like a war profiteer, you know? And again, like, I think bringing the human element against RoboCop, and this guy could become biometrically enhanced or whatever at some point, get a power mech suit, something, you know? But I think the idea of the human connection and, like, the human betrayal, the human evil, is, like, something that's really been missing from RoboCop. Pretty much since the original, you know, it's like there's a little bit of corporate greed in some of the other ones, but it's like, all right, every movie has that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you could have the wife turn on him.
Putting in Directive 4 was like that sort of forward thinking that the first movie had, you know, like that there's something that's classified even from RoboCop, like his own OS that he can't access, and the idea of them finding him in a like a warehouse, there's got to be so much other stuff like that that they could play with too, you know, like other code that unlocks different things, medical stuff to make the flesh work with the robotics, you know, so that it just unlocks a whole new chapter for those resistance fighters.
So Chris, I actually, mine was kind of a little bit of what you were doing, but I love, you know, what we've been coming up with, this kind of prequel idea of Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it'd be interesting because
I think we should do all of these. By the way, like we should do a giant universe reboot and do all of these.
What would be cool is if, you know, like I said, we have Murphy doing that. And I originally thought what would be cool is just, I love the idea of RoboCop being under a tarp somewhere and getting rebooted. That's the only thing that really came to my mind, Chris. But what could be cool is what you're talking about is, you know, Murphy is trying to find this other bad version 1.0 of RoboCop, and goes into this warehouse, finds the prototype with the arm, and you've got the chip from Terminator, and you see all these things, and he creates a Terminator to help him get this RoboCop. And you've got Terminator 1.0 versus RoboCop 1.0, and again, we know what happens to Murphy at the end. We know what happens to the Terminator at the end. Skynet gets their hands on it. Sky OPP or whatever it is now, you know.
All right, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Then Weyland-Yutani buys all of it, and this is how we get the androids flying into space.
That's right, how you
get... This is, and that's how we then eventually get to RoboCop versus Predator.
Versus Predator,
This is what... And I'm so glad the guys in the chat brought that up, because that caters to this thing that I've always been talking about how, like, I just thought before there were shared universes like Marvel and DC that all of movies was sort of a shared universe. So you could easily see a RoboCop fighting a Terminator or a Predator and aliens being in the future of all of those timelines converging. So I freaking love this. That's why I kind of almost feel like we do the prequel series, we keep the first movie, and then we start building these new versions that we were talking about, and we just do an entire universe reboot with this.
Nice.
I love it. I would absolutely love it. Also, I thought it would be kind of interesting because of, you know, this stuff's in my mind with Batman v Superman and Kong versus Godzilla, which just came out. It would be really amazing. I mean, cream dream shooting for the moon to have Peter Weller and Arnold Schwarzenegger. And in my mind, RoboCop is the key that helps them. He teaches them how to hack and reprogram Terminators. So
that's how they send the first one back to protect John. Is that one of the things that we're talking about too? Like,
absolutely.
That's how they
like
even
tie it all in.
Oh, dude. I love that.
Nice. Awesome. Or even if it doesn't have to do with John, that could be, you know, someone that's like, I know a guy in L.A. like John Connor. I'm going to make my way across this wasteland and, like, get the information to him. Like, they need, you know, that information out there. And that RoboCop's was one like, thing, I'll fucking go with you. Let's make another one of these movies.
With the Terminator franchise, when they, you know, when Terminator Genisys comes along and all of a sudden it's like, all right, well, it's not really Skynet anymore. Now it's this other thing that's kind of like Microsoft that we tricked everybody into downloading. It's like, you have to be careful. You have to be really careful because that precipice is there. You know what I mean? And it's, all it takes is somebody with the money to be like, no, I think we should do this. And all of a sudden, all these awesome ideas we're talking about suddenly get funneled into what? Like, what? Really? I mean, I didn't mind Genisys, but it felt like this is fan fiction, you know, and that's what I don't want these ideas to start to turn into. But I think that's the awesome thing is that it is fan fiction. That doesn't sound like fan fiction to me. Yeah. I know it's easy for the person that came up with some of it to say that, but I feel like we're approaching this from a pretty serious perspective. Like if I had the money, we'd be doing some of these tomorrow. You know what I mean? And I think some people would want to join us in that venture. I hope.
Well, judging on like... what's going on. Oh, sorry, Mickey. What were you going to say?
No, I was like, if you were gonna do the prequel, I would like Frank Miller to be a part of it.
I would love
to see what he would come up with.
I'd love to give Fred Decker another shot at directing like a season finale episode or something like that.
Not your fault, buddy. We get it's not your fault. It's not your fault.
No, Peter Weller should direct the pilot, actually.
Oh, he probably would.
He probably would too. Yeah, I do want to touch back on the chat because again, it's been very active since we've been pitching these ideas. So Alex Bonafonte just wants to throw a rest in peace to Miguel Ferrer.
Yeah,
double back on that. We absolutely love Miguel Ferrer. The Stand Agent is one of my favorite things. Mick Garris has incredible stories about Miguel Ferrer. Check out Mick Garris' Postmortem podcast. Mm-hmm. He has episodes where he talks about The Stand and great stories about Miguel Ferrer. Nicholas Mamounis says, can they do another film with the Nancy Allen character? And then Alex Bonafont says, if resurrected as a female RoboCop. Again, we did touch on that. That is something I would love to see. I think that could also be a great hook ending to this RoboCop versus Terminator film, which in my mind, I envision, honestly, a trilogy of films because both franchises are so fucked up right now. Pardon my French. But both franchises are in, like, complete disarray, and they both need this, and I need this, all
right? Yeah. They are sort of tail-spinning right now.
This is the Freddy versus Jason.
That's also, I forgot to mention.
Sorry, Mickey. Oh.
I forgot to mention another scene in the third movie that I actually really liked was when RoboCop put, you know, Lewis on the altar.
Oh, that's right.
And
she
is. I just thought that was, I don't know why. I just like, you know, that whole scene was just very kind of like, it was almost like, I mean, that's what he thought of her.
Mm-hmm.
It's like literally like, you know, like it was almost the element of him falling in love with his partner.
Mm-hmm.
And that
human, like, I mean, like, because he didn't have any, obviously he didn't have any interaction with his wife at that point. And, you know, you saw a little bit of that in the third one too, that he still was thinking about his wife. But I almost believe, and in that scene, there's a scene where he sees his wife and Lewis, like back to back kind of thing, whatever like that. And it's almost like morphing into one. So it's almost like as if he took his love for his wife and transferred that over to Lewis.
Yeah, I feel
so
that.
I would love that to be explored in a fourth one or whatever. I mean, like, it's almost like for lack of a better term, it's the Bride of Frankenstein.
You know,
doubling on what you're saying about Frank Miller, Nicholas Mamounis in the chat says, I liked Frank Miller's Sin City film. He'd make a great director for a RoboCop movie. Mm. Very true. I also did really want to see the Neil Blomkamp RoboCop that was supposed to happen.
Oh, wow.
As well as the Neil Blomkamp Alien that was supposed
to
happen.
Yeah. That's right. What's up with that?
I think Aronofsky was going to do a RoboCop at one point, and the studio insisted on it being PG-13 and 3D, and he was like, fuck this, I'm out.
Yeah, see, that's ridiculous. That's insane right there.
Also, in the chat, Alex Bonafonte says, hell yeah, to the Alien Weyland Yutani crossover. Says it would still be the Weyland Corporation at that point in time, which is correct. And then he also says, make a joke out of it and do a RoboCop Breakfast Club crossover. And that would be certainly interesting waters.
That's because of that Judd Nelson knockoff guy that was in the first one.
I did get sent a lot of RoboCop.
You see it? You see us as who we are. The prom, the geek, the RoboCop.
We found out that each of us has a little RoboCop inside us today.
only if RoboCop is Vernon. All right, that's the only way that works. You know, it comes in here.
2 months. I've got you for 2 months.
For 2 months.
One you more. You want another one? You got another one. Come on, come on. One more. That's another. I got you for 2 months.
So dead or alive, you're coming with me.
Stop it. You're coming to detention on Saturday.
So Gold's code in the chat says, I'm just here for the movie mashups, RoboCop and a half. So I think that is a reference, I believe, not to toot my own horn, I believe that may be a reference to some of my work. You can follow me on Instagram at Pop Culture Punk if you want to see all the most ridiculous movie mashups ever. You can also follow me on Facebook at Chris Styles. Sorry for the hard plug right in the middle of everyone's good time there. Didn't mean to break up the fun. But Alex Bonifant also says, agreed, Lewis on the altar was very profound.
Yeah.
So Alex really seems to be doubling in on a lot of what we have, a lot of what we're saying here. But we are almost out of time. We have about 4 minutes to go. Is there anything else you guys want to see in a RoboCop film that you've never seen? Anything that you want to throw into this franchise? You know, like Guns N' Roses on the soundtrack, or does Eddie Furlong need to do one of these sequels? Like
we've already
any
done
other kitchen sink we need to throw in there?
We've already done Bride of RoboCop, so we have to do Seed of RoboCop.
and apparently
and a Robo Baby.
Like, oh my God!
You have to
roll baby, yes.
And apparently the mother is Molly Ringwald. We have to add that.
Yes.
There.
Oh, I love it. Keeps. Oh my God! Take my money. And then instead of dancing Selleck and Gutenberg, you've got like Rob Lowe, Judd Nelson, and Emilio. They're the three men.
Oh wow! Oh my God!
There you go.
It's almost like training for Young Guns 3.
I will say this though. You know, Dave, you mentioned about like the doing the cameos of Ray Wise and all this kind of stuff. I do want Robert John Burke to make a cameo because again, I don't think he was terrible. Yeah. I really think the internet gave him a bad rap all these years.
He should come in as an executive or something though.
That's what I'm saying. I think if he was working on the board of you know, OPP or Sky OPP or whatever.
Have him be hands-on with the design, you know? He could be kind of like the champion for the humanity that they're ignoring and designing him. You know what I mean? Like, he could be an opposing force for the corporate greed or whatever.
Or he'd also be a good, a really good, you know, as the war profiteer that sells everybody out and like, you know, right?
Yes.
You think,
oh, yeah, really yeah. Screwed. Absolutely.
He's
got a very sinister vibe, sinister
like,
angle.
I know you were saying that he should become biometric as part of his own motivation, but I think what would be even crazier is if they do to him like what they did to all the guys in Star Trek with the Borg. Like, yeah, we promise we'll only kill those guys. You'll become like, you know, a diplomat or something. We'll take care of you. But they really just turn him into a RoboCop also. So it's like your reward is being made immortal like us or whatever. You know what I mean? Not like you.
You know,
and so they trick him, you know, and so that's why he's even more pissed when he has to fight RoboCop at the end, you know, or maybe he's happy RoboCop kills him. Actually, that might make more sense. Yeah. But that all so cool setup right there, though, man.
Yeah. Again, as long as that and politics. I mean, to me, RoboCop is political.
Yeah.
If you're not going to do politics,
even in the apocalypse, there needs to be like upstart politics that are like fucked up and get in the way, and they play a role as the villain. But unfortunately, we are just about out of time, guys. So be sure to tune in next week. I do want to thank everyone at home for watching. I want to thank Phantom Spotlight for giving us a platform to host this show and talk to the people about RoboCop. Do tune in next week when we're going to be talking about Howard the Duck and how we're going to bring the duck back into all of our lives.
Nice.
It is going to be a magical, magical time.
It's going to be RoboCop versus Howard the Duck.
That may or may not be part of my pitch. I can confirm nor deny.
RoboDuck.
RoboDuck.
But until you tune in to us next time, be sure to follow us on Phantom Spotlight. We got a Twitch, Facebook, YouTube. Be sure to follow Hollow Knight Network. Be sure to follow Live Action Media and Movie Graveyard. Until then, guys, rewind those laser discs, back up those Betamax, and keep analog alive. We will see you soon.
Be kind, rewind.
You've been listening to the Hollow Knight Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. That's the word hollow, the number 9, INE. Now broadcasting from our new home on the web, hollow9.com, where you can find info on all of our awesome programming as well as the team behind the shows. Leave us your feedback, join in the conversation, and be a part of the action. Find the Hollow Knight Network on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. Email us at info@hollow9.com or at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Join in the fun. Hollow Nine.
I don't know if you think making me repeat myself is going to somehow make the story change, or if you just don't want to hear what it is I actually have to say, but again, we changed course based on orders received on the flash band from company headquarters. Code Gold, Command Eyes Only. Standard operating procedure, as I know you are aware. We didn't just decide out of the blue to extend our trip by 18 months. LV-324 is well outside the standard commercial shipping routes, even under expanded jurisdiction. Search and Rescue would rarely venture into an unregulated area without more concrete proof of life. We sure found something out there already.
When you watch it as a little kid, you know, it's a monster movie, it's really creepy, but then there's all the weird artificial intelligence stuff, there's the, like, rapey nature of the facehuggers and all that.
Why don't you stick your face in the egg, dude? Is there an egg opening in front of you? Stick your face in there and see what happens.
When I fall asleep at night, I have this irrational fear that something is going to crawl inside and, like, lay eggs inside of me. I'm actually wondering, now that we're talking about this, if this might have been the impetus for that.
You know, Star Wars comes out, and they go, what other movies do we have set in space? Boom, Alien gets green light the next day.
Very similar to just even how our government is in preparation for something where they didn't know exactly what was in store, like specifically xenomorphs.
Bodily fluids, and it's not just blood. There's a lot of, like, grease, and there's a lot of sweat. And if it wasn't the blood that got me, it was the sheer amount of sweat.
We're on a mission to bring back knowledge of the xenomorph.
The end of all mankind, all wrapped up in a bow, just waiting for us to come along. And you want to bring one home for your friends in the weapons division. Merry fucking Christmas, right? Well, you go ask those badass mothers that came back from 324 with me about that. Right there, all of splattered all over the walls of the escape pod. Be my guest. See, you can keep trying to make this about negligence, about insubordination, about chain of command and regulations, but when you're done with all that bullshit, you're gonna find yourself staring down the barrel of a living, breathing devil in the flesh that bleeds acid and lives to kill us.